Welcome to Season 3 of The Blunderbus, Australia's best bus on which to talk about leadership failure. My name is Edward Vaughan. Join me as I travel far and wide on my special bus, The Blunderbus, and have honest conversations with great leaders about some of their greatest leadership disasters. On The Blunderbus, we think it's possible to learn more from your moments of failure than your moments of success, if you know the magic secret. And we also know that failure can be fun, especially other people's. If you've been enjoying The Blunderbus, maybe you'd like to share the podcast with someone that you know. Why blunder alone when you can blunder with a friend? In fact, The Blunderbus has had over 4,500 downloads and is now the world's most popular podcast about leadership failure recorded on a bus in the Southern Hemisphere. Today's episode is sponsored by City to City and their Revitalize Australia project. It's an ambitious attempt to see health and life breathe back into thousands of churches all around this country that are not reaching their gospel potential. So go to citytocityaustralia.org.au and click on the Revitalize Australia tab to find out more. So today, the Blunderbus has been allowed to cross the border and head into Victoria. Thank you, Dan, again, for letting us do that. And we've travelled all the way to see Pete Greenwood, pastor of Inner West Church in Flemington and catalyst for Melbourne West. G'day, Pete.
G'day, Ed.
Nice to see you.
Nice to see you and hear you and be on your bus with you.
Absolutely. And isn't it a great bus? Hey, sorry about your AFL team, the Bulldogs getting flogged.
Yes, there was a aura of sadness over the Western Suburbs. But good on you, Demons. I mean, it's been a long time. I'm okay with it.
Okay. Well, my team, the Rabbitohs, also got beaten, not flogged, but beaten. But there you go. That's the way it is. Hey, Pete, you're a church planter, right? Yeah. So I'm particularly interested. Have you got some church planting blunders to share with us today?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Ed, I like my blunders like I like my food, slow cooked rather than flash fried.
Nice. It feels very sort of inner west of Melbourne, doesn't it?
It is very inner west. It is. Yep. Low and slow. It's how I like my family.
Okay. Well, tell us all about it.
Yeah, well, I guess I'm a church planter and, there's all sorts of opportunities for you to kind of flame out big in church planting. However, for me, as I've looked back over, and I've been doing it 6 years now, as I look back over it, I think that the most significant failure on my part was it started with a small seed. Which then grew slowly but significantly over a number of years and only became aware of it and really started to do something about it maybe 4 or 5 years in. So, and maybe that's other people's experience. So happy to talk about that. And
This is the slow growing failure.
Exactly right.
Tell us.
I'll tell you. So for me, it was all about expectations. Church planting, right, is high investment activity. It's high investment because it's a new thing and you're gathering new people around this common vision. It's exciting, it's big, and there's lots to do. And so, you develop as a church planter, you develop a team of people from another church or different churches, committed Christians in an area, and they get all in, right? And as a church planner myself, like I'm also all in on it. Right. It's my baby, my vision under God and God's vision, obviously. And it's kind of the sort of thing we go, I'm in on this. Like this is what I'm going to live or die on for however many years it's going to take to get this thing happening and established. So church planting in general is high investment. The way we went about church planting is even more high investment because we decided that we'd approach it using a model called missional communities, which is basically like taking small groups of people within a church, so a small group model, but then making them kind of in very intentional families on mission. So people who spend a lot of time together, have a common mission focus and goals together, are really deep into each other's lives, following Jesus together, And that in itself is a high intensity model.
Yeah.
So we've got a high intensity activity using a high intensity model and a high investment model, right? So my what I basically decided in my head that my team that I'd gathered should be as invested as I am and as invested as my model tells me that they should be.
Right.
They should be in it, invested in it for with all the kind of energy that I have been.
Yes.
And we are family together, so and that family should not have an expiry date. So in my head, I imagine this group of people that I would just be tracking with for years and years and years and years.
Yes.
And that led to some big problems.
I think I can see this, but what are the problems?
Yeah, well, I'll talk about it in terms of maybe like maybe symptoms of the problem, I guess, that started to bubble to the surface. One thing was that I realized that I in the inner west of Melbourne is a very transient area. People come and going all the time. Every November, I found myself feeling increasingly crushed as person after person would tell me that they're moving.
Yes.
And up to, I think, 1 year, we had 20 people do this.
Wow.
Out of a church of like 50.
What? Wow. Yeah. Wow.
That's hard for any planter to deal with, especially hard because I had this vision of this actually a very intransient group in a transient area, but it didn't happen. And so I was increasingly felt just abandoned, I think, every year. The other problem was that my core members, the people that we initially gathered, really started to burn out at about three, four-year mark. They'd been running hard and they started to burn out. And that's only in retrospect. I don't think none of us kind of named that at the time, but there was a lot of conflict and it was unspoken conflict. It was awkwardness, a lack of communication. And I think the problem was that we didn't really know why we were feeling bad about it. They didn't know. I didn't know. But I think this is the problem. They're actually burning out. Mm. Thirdly, I talked about missional communities. We had a bit of mission paralysis. Because I expected so much from my leaders, I expected them to have my level of commitment and time and energy, even like training and know-how. And so what we found was as I sent them out, I guess, on the mission, they felt completely paralyzed and didn't know what to do. Every time they tried, we said, "Why don't you do this simple thing?" It felt like it wasn't enough. There must be much, much more to do, if that makes sense. We want them to be fruitful, but everything didn't feel fruitful enough. If that makes sense. So we experienced this kind of paralysis and a lot of frustration from everyone, including myself. And so, those are the kind of things that start to bubble to the surface.
So I'm guessing, Pete, as you look at this, well, I'm guessing the answer is not that you should expect less of your leaders, is it? Is that the learning out of this? Expect less of your followers and the key people involved in a church plant?
Well, yes and no, I think. So Dietrich Bonhoeffer has this great book, Life Together, which I read as a very, very early. And he has this line. I'm paraphrasing this. He says, never love your vision of community more than the community itself.
It's brilliant, isn't it? It's just such a great.
Good.
Yeah.
So good. And I remember reading it maybe like first year in and going, God, I'll never do it. But actually, that's exactly what I did, you see.
Yes.
It wasn't that it's wrong to hope for and expect high investment from a planting team.
Right.
I think that's good, right? But what is bad is when you bring all your hopes and dreams and overlay them over the people that you actually have.
Yes.
With all of their limits and all of their capacities, and all of their particular way they're wired.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's what I did.
Yeah.
And so I was, as much as they, I was kind of crushing them under the weight of what I'd hoped and what I told them they should hope for as well, right?
Yeah. And dare I say, are we talking about idolatry here?
Well, that's what it is, right? It's loving something you created in your mind more than what God has created in front of you, and failing to worship God by loving people well. And I think that's what was happening. And so there was I call it like an overrealized visionology. You know, we call it overrealized eschatology.
That's great.
Overrealized visionology, where I was bringing good things, good hopes and dreams, but just making them a totally unreasonable thing to expect from the real people in front of me.
And it's really subtle, isn't it? Because there is this way where you can, you know, overvalue, over-treasure, you know, the church, and in some sense almost overvalue, you know, the mission or the expression of mission or whatever. And, you know, that's really complicated, isn't it? Because surely planting a church is good. Surely, you know, being involved in the mission of the kingdom is good. And yet there is a way that my church or my vision of that becomes, you know, preeminent and dominant in some way.
That's right. Yeah.
So what did you do when you realized this was happening?
Mm. Yeah, I mean, the realization came as slow as well as the actual process did.
But, okay.
I certainly tried to change my expectations of people and be more aware of their limits and capacities, and tried to be I started deliberately celebrating the small things.
Okay.
Those small incremental bits of progress towards the vision, I started to just really celebrate that. And
what would be an example of one of those?
Oh, so let's say someone who has never actually learnt the name of a neighbour.
Right.
Learns the name of their neighbor.
Okay. Yep. This is to be celebrated.
And I'm like, awesome. Yeah. That is the first step towards, you know, being missionally effective. I started to make a big deal about that rather than constantly putting the weight on. Imagine when all your neighbors have come to Christ.
Right. Yes.
But I started going, that is amazing. Like, that's a big step. And you know what? For a inner city Melbourne dweller who's time poor, working really hard to even afford to live in this area, for them to find a bit of margin in their lives to start building a relationship like that, that's a win.
Yeah.
For a Christian, I think. So stuff like that. I also just realized that early on, because of my expectation, I actually didn't support my leaders very well.
Okay.
I basically said to them, of course you get it, the whole, you know, be kind of pastoral and missional and lead people to Christ. And here's what you got to do, go and do it. And gave them very little actual on the ground support for that. So one of the things I've really changed is gone, my job is to come alongside you, to coach you, to support you, to be there week to week, which actually I just didn't really do that much in the early years. And that's one of my biggest regrets, actually, is that I didn't love and care for them very well.
And I think in the missional church model, that's incredibly important because you are, to a large extent, shifting people's church, especially people who've been in churches, shifting their cultural experience and expectations. Mm-hmm. So that the missional community is not just your Wednesday night Bible study. It actually is something different, but it looks like Wednesday night Bible study.
That's right. I mean, we call it a decentralized model of ministry, and it is, and I believe that. I think it's good. But decentralized doesn't mean no centralized.
Yes, so true.
There needs to be central support, some frameworks there.
So, Pete, out of all that, what did you learn about failure?
I really learnt that one, by God's grace, failure didn't mean utter failure.
Right.
For us, we weathered those defeats and right. And moved through and learnt from them. And so
it wasn't
sure
terminal and it wasn't fatal.
Exactly. Praise God for that.
Yes.
It could have been, but it wasn't. I think I've learned is just to how important it is to apply the gospel to your own heart.
Okay. What do you mean by that? That's a great city-to-city expression.
It is. One I stand by. here's what I mean. Here's what I think. So in city-to-city, you know, circles, we talk about the sin beneath the sin a lot. So the surface sin for me was maybe it was a unhealthy expectations, but there was something driving that actually.
Right.
Underneath it was there was actually a fear of abandonment.
Right.
Wow. I was really afraid that people would leave me.
Yes.
And so I expected them and basically told them not to.
Yes.
Which was driven actually by my own personal fear. And there was also something else there. There was kind of a pride that we'd be the church that bucked the trend. And that all those other church plants that lost people, all those other churches that had big back doors.
Right.
We'd buck the trend. We'd be the one that was different.
Kind of like the perfect church plant, that sort of thing.
Yeah, how about that?
That'd be cool.
And as you say, like idolatry is the issue. And that's what I was really worshipping, really, was what was really driving me at heart was my own fears and my own really selfish pride. Which I need to repent of, actually, and a gospel confidence that says that God won't abandon me. So it's actually okay if people come and go. And it's his church. It's okay if people come and go. And he's accomplishing the mission. So it's okay if we're not working to 150% capacity all the time. It's okay if there's people with differing levels of ability and limits as well.
Yes.
That's been my own heart work, I guess, that I hope will help me to be a healthier leader into the future.
And I wonder too, Pete, whether it allows you to be a much freer kind of leader, more generous with your people and with all sorts of things.
Really? Not perfectly. It's November, almost November. And so those conversations are happening about people moving on, and that still hurts, actually. But I'm not blaming people for it like I used to. I don't feel abandoned. I feel sad, but that's a different thing.
City to City estimate that there are perhaps 3,000 Bible-based gospel-centered churches in Australia that are plateauing or declining. Just think of the potential impact if those churches could rediscover their mission and purpose to reach out to their communities with the love of Jesus. It's a massive exercise in leadership renewal. If you or your church would like to be part of that, head to citytocityaustralia.org.au and find the Revitalize Australia tab to find out more. If you've enjoyed listening to The Blunderbuss, please subscribe, rate and review. It helps other people find the podcast and also meets my personal needs for approval and affirmation. Hang on, I think that was a blunder right there. Oh, well, see you next time on The Blunderbuss.